Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, April 18th. I'm Ray Graff. On today's show, we talk about intellectual property. It's the Copyright Forum. And joining us in the studio, Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. They are here to answer your questions about protecting your writing, music, and art. Give us a call right now if you have a question. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You may also email the program if you wish. It's voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number, jot it down, 800-348-2551. The Copyright Forum begins after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On today's show, we do the Copyright Forum. And to answer your questions, we have a great panel in the studio. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and wrote a column for Metroland. I think he writes now for The Alt. Bill Westwood, who's actually here today, is one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. He's also offered to draw Alan's ankle injury, which will be very interesting. I'll tell Alan. Polly Law is an artist and illustrator. She runs an art studio and maintains a website at buttonwoodart.com. Welcome all to the show, and now it's time to get the calls in here. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. We'll start on Wall Street, where there's this sculpture of a bull and a little girl's causing a lot of trouble. Paul Rapp, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, the bull on Wall Street has been there since, 1989? And, you know, it's iconic, and, you know, a lot of people go and look at it. It's a big, it's like 16 feet long and 5 tons. And 2 months ago on International Women's Day, am I talking to the right microphone?
Yeah, yeah. You can't hear yourself?
It sounds funny. It just kind of sounds funny.
It does. Well, you usually
do. Just you, Paul.
Yeah.
There.
Crank it up. You know, you played rock and roll for far too long. You can't hear a thing. I mean, who are we kidding?
Everything sounds funny.
Exactly.
So a hedge fund, some kind of hedge fund, on International Women's Day two months ago, put a small, defiant bronze girl in front of the in front of the bull, and everybody thought that's the greatest thing ever, except the original sculptor of the bull doesn't think so, and he had his lawyer send an angry lawyer letter to the city of New York, claiming that it was copyright infringement and it was trademark infringement and it was all these other things. And I mean, the lawyer should be ashamed of themselves. I've got an article in the Alt tomorrow about this.
And what's your opinion on this?
There's no copyright infringement. They're claiming that it's a derivative work because the girl is obviously sort of interacting with the bull, and they're saying that it's disparagement because now the bull's being made fun of, losing sight of the fact that 6 years ago during the Occupy time, that bull became an icon of greed, you know, and they did political theater around the bull during the Occupy movement because they had the encampment right, you know, like a block away. So the bull already, you know, didn't have the greatest reputation, you know, for bronze bulls.
As bronze bulls go.
So the whole thing is just kind of silly, and you can read more about it in the Alt.
Yeah, we'll look forward to that tomorrow.
Plus the fact that tourists are regularly photographed stroking the bullish parts for good luck.
Thank you for that one. What do you say we go to the phone? 800-348-2551. Plenty of bull to go around. Matt in Robbinsville, New Jersey. Matt, you're on.
Hi. I'm really glad to be on the program. Love the program. Love the station. Love it all. I listen on the web.
Okay.
And I'm glad I was able to catch the Copyright Forum today. I have a question. I'm an independent sound music producer, songwriter, and I independently produce albums. And I occasionally use people who record certain portions on the album, like they may do a guitar lick or they may do a background harmony or something, but it's still the song that I wrote. and that I pay for everything that's on it. Mm-hmm. And my question is, do I need to include those parties when I file the copyright for sound recording forms, as they have copyright to the portion of the recording that they did?
No. I mean, generally, you know, in the industry, these are, you know, side men and side women.
Works made.
You know,
for
and
you give them a buyout, right?
You may want to have them sign a work for hire agreement stating that they don't have any copyright claim in the sound recording.
Uh-huh.
But you know, as the business works, you hire session musicians and they come in and play their parts, and they don't have. You know, it would be highly unprofessional and weird for them to come running back and claim that they own the copyright.
And the reason I ask is on the form, when you go through the online entry, you know, they kind of underscore, was anyone involved? Did anybody have any portion? And it seemed odd. And what you said is what I thought I should do.
Yeah.
But they didn't give any guidance.
And a work for hire agreement can really be two sentences and just have them sign it and then.
Okay.
It's indisputed. You're the copyright owner from the get-go then.
Paul, I'd like to, just because I have such a problem with work for hire agreements, maybe he could do just an all rights agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Work for hire is kind of an anathema among the creative community. And anyway, you would accomplish the same thing, I think, without the work
without the nasty taste.
Right.
You really don't.
Exactly.
If you're doing a song and you're a composer and you hire somebody for X number of dollars, a couple hundred bucks, you have somebody play on your song, it's implicit that this person, you're buying that person out. You're paying for his services, are you not?
Well, it depends, because if you hired Yo-Yo Ma to.
Right.
You know,
to play Beethoven. He didn't write Beethoven.
No, but say you hired him, say you wrote a new composition, but you hired Yo-Yo Ma to play it, that would be different. You'd get a different result in the recording than if you hired me or.
Well, I think that the thing is, yes, somebody hires me to create a magazine cover or an advertisement or something like that, but... I either negotiate with them to maintain my copyright, or I negotiate with them to sell them certain usage rights. But the work for hire in itself has been made into a bad thing, because what happens is there are a lot of abusive clients out there that come and won't work with you, force work for hire down your throat. It's associated with abusive practices.
Yeah
but I could see that in your line of work.
Where he creates the entire thing.
But
this is a different.
Yeah, but you know, a session musician, I think you do want it to be work for hire, because you don't want him coming back after 35 years and saying.
Well, I suppose that's true, but how many of them are going to be around in 35 years?
Yeah, that's right, they're musicians.
All right.
No offense intended.
Very, very nice. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gloria in Scotia is on. Gloria.
Hi. It's actually Goshen.
Oh, Goshen. Oh,
Goshen.
Splendid. Well,
yeah,
it says Scotia, but wherever. Yeah.
That's okay. That's cool. Listen, you guys were talking about the bull, but what you didn't mention that I've always found very interesting in this whole recent goings-on is that bull was originally placed there illegally. That sculptor, you know, paid for it himself, had it shipped there, and then it was removed.
Yep.
Because it was placed there illegally, and then I guess the powers that be, you know, decided to bring it back or whatever. So it's very interesting that, given that history, he should have such issues with the... what do they call her? I think they call her the fearless girl.
The fearless girl.
Well, you know, it always depends on whose ox is being gored.
Oh,
but you know, and you know, to make it even weirder, the fearless girl is really an advertisement for a female-centric, investment fund. For
I've such mixed feelings about it, because on the surface, her image is so fabulous, and she's meant so much, and you see these young girls and these tourists coming and having their pictures taken.
Yeah.
And yet if you look at you know, if you look at the backstory and you realize who put it there, then we go, oh.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just thought it was so interesting that, given his history, he should be making such a fuss.
Well, thank you, Gloria. We appreciate the call from Goshen. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Copyright Forum today with Polly Law, Bill Westwood, at Paul Rapp. Now, if you are a sculptor, and for instance, the Scary Lucy, and you make a representation of someone that is so horrendous as to be frightening, the estate of that person sue you?
I doubt it.
Probably not. Yeah, that Lucy one was...
Whoa, that was real
that
scary.
That was bad. And there was one in Brazil for Ronaldo, the soccer player, just in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, I've seen that one.
Yeah, he just looked ridiculous. Didn't look anything like him. And he's like actually standing next to it, smiling.
He's okay with it. What if you're not okay with it? Do you have any recourse?
I think if you're a public figure, you probably don't.
No.
Well, what about the celebrity laws, though, Paul, that would apply for
right,
illustration, artwork, that type of thing? Wouldn't that apply to it?
Even Lucy's estate, let's say.
Well, whoever holds the rights to those.
To use of image and likeness. But that's usually, those rights of personality laws are typically for advertising, you know, or for some... And just making an ugly statue of someone without more.
So art is art, even if it's lousy. All right, I get the point. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Henyon Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole-grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume, and cover letter writing. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York. Working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost three decades. ShannonRose.com. The New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Services. Offering assistance via a new website, nysba.org/lawyer-referral. And Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts. Locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement, a proud supporter of public radio, FortHillAutoBody.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Polly Law is here, champing at the bit. Bill Westwood is here, Paul Rapp as well, and you at home. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpopwamc.org, and we'll take care of a couple of email messages before we get back to the phones. This one's from Yazoo, who says, given that a post is not plagiarized, are Facebook posts copyrighted?
I think it might. I'm guessing there's something in the terms of service.
Probably, yeah.
In Facebook that says no, but I'm not sure.
But they're not also not registered.
But they're also
even if they were.
But once they're done and out there, they're automatically sort of de facto registered.
Yeah, if somebody writes it, it's copyrighted. It's protected by copyright. But the issue is if it's on Facebook. The terms of service would tell you if you have to give up any.
I think
actually, you don't
give up any.
Yeah, you're not giving up your. I think the answer is yes, actually. I just changed my mind.
What about Twitter? You put messages out there to show the world just how witty you are, and they're out there. And then if somebody retweets them, then what are your rights there?
They aren't, because that's just part of the structure.
Well, what if they're on a television show and they say, so-and-so tweeted blah, blah, blah?
It's still,
I don't know if it would qualify as copyrightable. It's sort of in the mid-ground between word or phrase and something
written. It's public
speech.
Yeah. And so I would think it wouldn't be protected per se.
And if people are really concerned about their copyrights, they shouldn't be Twitter.
It should be on Facebook.
You make a point.
Interesting question, though.
This is from Peggy. I paid $300 for a license to use lyrics in a personal essay that'll be published in a small literary journal. Circulation about 1,000. I'm cleared for 10,000 copies, but the license specifically mentions this small journal only. Will I have to pay more money if another magazine picks up this piece, or if I decide to self-publish a collection? And that is from Peggy. Yeah.
Yes.
I think the answer.
What was the question again? Oh, she will have to
reapply license. For a license.
Yeah, because the license specifically states that usage and additional usage.
Okay.
And that usage only.
For. All right, fair enough. This one's from Lily, who says, I am releasing my first full-length album in June, and I'm wondering what the best copyright strategies are for artists self-releasing music in the age of Spotify and other internet platforms. And that's from Lily.
Registration.
Yeah, just before you release it to the world.
Or do it now.
Yeah, register.
Avoid the rush.
Right.
Yeah, you know, after the final mix and before mastering or after mastering, just register it with the copyright
office.
Go to
www.copyright.gov and register.
And how much is that?
35?
I think it's 55, isn't it?
55?
I don't know what it is for music. 55 for...
If it's multiple pieces now, it's going to be 55.
Now, can you send it... Now, will they allow you to FTP the audio, or do you need to send a hard copy?
You can send up MP3s.
Mm, very good. So it can be done in one night. A couple of drinks, $35 later.
There you go.
That's right.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Adam in Saugerties is on. Adam.
Hi, Ray. I have various things that I've written, mostly short stories, published on a online writing site, and I don't know if your panel has any knowledge about that kind of thing. What kind of rights do I have, and what have I given up by doing that?
I think you have to look at the terms of service for the site itself, but it would never hurt to register the piece if you feel like your writing is getting some traction. You might want to consider registering your work before you submit it.
Yeah, or just
go ahead, I'm sorry.
If you're pretty prolific, every 3 months, just register everything that you've written.
Group registration. Yeah.
What do you have any insight as to what I've given up by putting things in like a port like that?
Nothing. I don't think. I mean, these sites aren't going to stay up for very long if they, claim to own your copyright.
Yeah.
So, I don't think you've really given up everything and anything. And so keep writing and keep posting.
But I would look at the terms of service just to make sure.
Okay.
Have you ever encountered anybody who's had a problem with that at all?
Well, then everything's probably cool. I mean, these sites.
No, I think he asked if have you ever come up with anybody who's had this problem?
No. And on every once in a while, somebody reads the terms of service, and the terms of service are badly written, and everybody freaks out. Remember the whole thing with Facebook?
It happens periodically.
It resurfaces every three or four months.
Yeah, and there's usually a kernel of where you can see how they misinterpreted and how the lawyer overwrote the terms of service. But, I haven't encountered any problems with any of these sites.
All right, Adam, thank you for that. Our number here on Vox Pop, the Copyright Forum, is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp are here to answer your questions. Ken in Ticonderoga is on. Ken.
Hey, folks. Thanks for showing up. I've got a...
Bill,
I've got
he's
a
talking
friend.
To you.
Yeah. I got a friend in New York City that's a published author, and she's now got a award-winning anime short that she's shopping around the world for distribution rights. She's won awards in Cannes, Amsterdam, New York, Hollywood, blah, blah, blah. One of the challenges, opportunities that she had for distribution was in India. And long story short, it turns out that the folks she was dealing with had more of a criminal history than a legal, good guy history. So how do you protect yourself in distribution rights worldwide so that you don't get, robbed blind in producing animation out of the States?
Did she register her product before?
Oh, yeah. Okay. All registered, copywritten, et cetera, et cetera. She's got some decent attorneys, but the feeling I got was that, you know, if the guys in India, Brazil, Japan, East Asia decide to, you know, just take it and run, how do you, where do you go to court? Is it the World Corp? Is it East Asia? Is it Brazil or India? You know, how do you protect yourself as best you can?
The answer is you don't. I've got work that's been infringed around the world. I can't even read the languages that they've translated some of the labels into. It's very frustrating. If you do image searches for these two particular images, you come up with literally hundreds of infringements around the world.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing you try to do is align yourself with a big international publisher who, you know, takes care of all
that stuff.
You know, because if you have to go piecemeal country by country and you're dealing with countries with, you know, less developed concepts of intellectual property and less developed judicial processes, you know, to protect your work, you know, you're going to be chasing your tail for a long time.
Does the FBI cover just domestic infringement? Or?
Yeah, and they wouldn't be.
They don't go after that, really.
Garden variety.
And even with Canada, if somebody infringes your work, you have to, even if they're a signatory to the Berne Convention, you have to operate under their laws, of the other country's laws. And I had infringements and colleagues who have had infringements in Canada, and the maximum you can get is so far less than what you can get here. It's hardly worth pursuing. Plus, attorneys there won't do anything on a contingency basis, so even if it's statutory, it's a way. Even a commercial infringement, you can only get $20,000.
Wow.
Wow.
Our number
that's
here,
Canadian dollars.
Yeah,
<It's
like laughs>
right.
$15, right? apologize to those listening north of the border.
we are in upstate New York.
Hope the signal is weak today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Elizabeth and Troy is on. Elizabeth.
Hi, thanks for doing your show. My question is about how do I send the materials? I can fill out the registration form. I get down to the whole thing. But I have 72 squirrel pictures from my calendars over the last 6 years, and I have other things as well. Do I put them on a DVD and mail it?
No,
I don't know how to get the copies of the work.
Okay,
you put them into a folder and you compress it with like zip or some other.
So a computer folder, Elizabeth.
It's a computer folder.
Right.
Oh, and then I can attach it to the registration form?
Yeah, you can just upload it. Yep.
It's easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not so fast. It's a horrible website, and it's
it's
confusing, but like Ray said, you have a few drinks and you power through it.
That's right.
That's absolutely right. And it is of terrible questions and what do they really want and all that all the way through.
Well, there you go. But eventually, when you get
thanks
to the image,
so
you can upload the images. Thank you, Elizabeth. It's the Copyright Forum with Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, and Polly Law. Ray Graff in for Alan. The number is 800-348-2551. And Dawn, you're here. Where are you?
Hi. Yes, Dawn. Can you hear me?
Yeah, where are you calling from? From where are you
calling? I'm calling from Sheffield, Connecticut.
Oh, my gosh. So nice to have you here. You're on.
Thank you. Thanks for having this show. I was calling as an author who's had the rights reverted, and before I can go and reapply it out into the world, I wanted to know what that involves, whether it's just the formatting or the font or what exactly needs to change so that that falls under the previous publisher's copyright, and now I can adjust it.
You don't have to adjust anything. What was copywritten, what was registered or protected was the text, was the content of the text.
Correct.
And not the font or the page layout.
And fonts aren't copyrightable
anyway,
so you can just go and re-release it, you know, as is. If they send it to you on a disc, you can just take their name off it, put your name on it.
Just don't transfer it into papyrus. That's all I ask.
Very nice.
Probably ought to get a new ISBN. Do you know any? I don't know very much about those things.
Yeah, you need a new ISBN
number, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
And then you're good to go.
That'd be great. I heard that you had to change the formatting. I wasn't quite sure how that was supposed to be accomplished.
No, I mean, you can change it if you want to, if you want to put it in, you know.
Like InDesign or something like that, but you really don't have to.
Okay, good. So if you want to go Comic Sans with the font, it's okay.
That was Comic Sans Wingdings.
Yeah. Wingdings. But, you know, if you shop it to a new publisher, if they want to change the layout or the typeface or anything, they'll do it.
So the fonts, all the fonts that you see, the common fonts, they are open source and not at all, even the name.
Trademarked.
So if you use Comic Sans, I mean, somebody had to come up with that, right?
Beyond people laughing at you behind your back.
It's a ridiculous font. I hate that font. when news people send me stories, you know, so-and-so was killed today, and it's a whimsical Comic Sans.
Have you seen the front of Mar-a-Largo?
No.
It's in Comic Sans.
You're kidding me.
The name is in Comic Sans.
Really?
Uh-huh.
That's Lordy.
Not sure why you so beloved down there.
Unless somebody, like, photoshopped something goofy on Facebook. Imagine that happening, you know, but
enough about fonts.
I can
right?
see it now. The White House stationery in Comic Sans.
The idea originated here.
Okay. Peter in Albany. Peter, you're on.
Hi. I am a minor author of a few published books, one of which was self-published. The others were commercially published, and then the rights reverted to me, and I put them back in print myself. Now, here's my question. I have a Google alert on my own name, and periodically it says that my books are available for free download in Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I've talked to people about this. They say one person did tell me that there was a place I could report it, but I'm not sure where. Other minor authors have told me it's just not worth it. Anybody who downloads a book from Russia is probably not going to buy it anyway. But what's your opinions?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot you can do. I mean, there's music sites, too, that are based in, Estonia and places. You know, and I have people come, and they'll send me five links to where their album is available from Estonia. I'm going, you know, we're not going to Estonia and busting these guys.
Right.
And the same, I think pretty much almost everything in print, you know, Peter, is going to be like that. You're going to find it somewhere to download for free. Sometimes it's not even there. It just says it is, and then you try to download it, and you end up with a virus on your computer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's an artist to do? What's an author to do to make a buck in this day and age, then?
Be frustrated.
Be frustrated.
Count on the inherent goodness of other people.
Yeah. Like, you know, when I lecture, I tell artists, you know, don't be worried that, you know, you put stuff online and people are going to, like, you know, copy it and post it. You know, be more worried that they won't.
But register it ahead of time anyway, just in case.
All right, over to Frank. Frank in Easton. Frank, you're on.
Hi. I have questions that relate to an artist or designer, architect, whatever. And it's kind of the inverse of what you'd expect me to ask. But what I'd like to know is if you're the first one or otherwise independently come up with a design or a sketch for some kind of a product or something like that, I'm not so worried about if somebody copies it. I'm in a lot of cases worried about the fact that I want always to have the right to do it and not have somebody steal that away from me.
Ah.
Okay, so in other words, I don't care if you copy it. You could have an image, you could draw it, you could color it, you could do whatever you want to with it. I don't want to lose the right to do that myself.
Well, then you need to register it.
Then you have to be careful about allowing other people to use it, because it weakens your ability to protect it if there should ever be a lawsuit.
But what I'm saying is, if I could prove that I was the first one to use it, can somebody take away my right to use it?
Well, the way you prove it is by registering it.
But as a general matter, no, somebody can't take it. If you can prove that you're the first to do a design and use it as a trademark, and we're talking trademark law here. Yeah. We're not talking necessarily copyright law. You know, if you're the first one to use a logo or a name for a business, you have the right to it in the geographical area you operate in, and nobody can take that away from
you.
But
by not registering it, you then add another level that you have to call Paul Rapp and say, hey, Paul,
you have to
here's my checkbook. Can you do something?
Yeah, you have to jump through a lot more hoops if you're not registered.
Well, it also kind of depends, I think, from the question that was asked. I'm not quite sure what we're protecting. Are we protecting a copyrightable material? Are we protecting trademark? Are we protecting
because just an idea,
some type of invention?
An idea is not copyrightable. It's the expression of that idea in tangible form that is
protectable. A drawing, a photograph.
But you know, independent creation of an identical work is possible under copyright law, as long as they're not copying yours.
So the George Harrison, My Sweet Lord,
didn't
really work for him.
That didn't work because he said, of course I knew the chiffon song, and this is the My Sweet Lord case. And so the judge found that he had unconsciously copied. But there was a case involving the Bee Gees. Some little guy who playing a Holiday Inn like in Indiana wrote a song that is exactly How Deep Is Your Love.
Really?
And he recorded it on a cassette at home. And then the Bee Gees song comes out.
And
And the Bee Gees testified that they were in a castle in France and they were recording Saturday Night Fever and they didn't go to Indiana and they didn't go to the Holiday Inn and they never, you know, and the judge said, well, you know, this is remarkable because you wrote basically
words and music.
Not words, just music. Yeah. And it was remarkably close.
Are only so many notes.
But I can go out and photograph a building. You can come stand right beside me, photograph the same building. We both own the copyright to our independent images, even though they may look exactly alike.
Hey, we have to take a break here. It's the Copyright Forum. Ray Graff in for Alan Chartok, Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and Paul Rapp. If you want to get a question in here, still time in the home stretch, 800-348-2551 is the number.
Support for WAMC comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts. For over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing, full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Jane Iredale, a mineral makeup company specializing in makeup that is good for the skin. Jane Iredale Retail Shop at Louisa Ellis Boutique, Great Barrington. JaneIredale.com. Poughkeepsie Farm Project, working to connect food, farm, and community. Organically grown CSA shares now available for the 2017 season. FarmProject.org. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Animals in Bronze, the Michael and Mary Erlinger collection of animal ear bronzes from the Georgia Museum of Art. ArkellMuseum.org. And Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery.
Vox Pop on WAMC, the Copyright Forum, 800-348-2551. Ray Graff here and joined today by Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp. The email address is voxpopwamc.org, and we'll take care of a couple of those, and then back to the phones we will go. This one's from James. The gentleman was talking about his work being downloaded for free in Russia, and Ray's comment on how do artists make a buck. I'd like to get music or other digital media directly from the artist and give them the money rather than the middlemen. Would that be possible?
Yes.
Sure.
Hopefully.
There are some musicians who have donate, you know, who have buttons on their sites saying
to give them money. And a lot of musicians, I mean, Sean Rao, you know, our own Sean Rao did a GoFundMe campaign. You know, raised a huge amount of money in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Recorded what I think is the best album of his career, and you know, he's not beholden to anybody.
The thing is, some artists really take tight control. I know King Crimson. They're not you do not get their music downloadable. You buy their CDs.
Right.
Prince
did, the Beatles did it for so long, and they finally gave in, and now they're everywhere. You could download that for free. But I know Crimson, if you want to get their latest record, you go to their website and you buy it. And that's one way to do it. This one's from Suzanne, who says, I'm writing a book in which I'm including two folk stories from the Sumerian era, about 6,000 to 7,000 years ago, even before I was born. I'm changing the story slightly, but I'm not the interpreter. These were interpreted and published so long ago that I'm having trouble determining when and by whom. Any comments? That's from Suzanne.
Well, it's definitely in the public domain.
Yes.
The tale is, but the translation and the telling of it might not be, but I generally wouldn't worry about it. And if you can't determine where this version was published and when, chances are it, you know, if it was originally published before 1923, it's definitely in the public domain. If it was originally published after that, it might be or might not be. But if you're having a hard time figuring it out for something like a retelling of it.
Yeah. I don't think Baal is going to be coming after you.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones we go. Anthony in New York. Where are you in New York, Anthony?
I'm in Poughkeepsie. How are you?
Good, man. You're on.
I had a question. A few years ago, I designed a board game, and I sent it off to this company in Connecticut that I found online. I wrote copyright, the date, my name on the board game itself, the prototype. I received only one communication from that company that, you know, they were still looking at it. And after that, I never heard back from them. Now, how can I find out if they sold my idea to another company or a third party? And I didn't register with the Library of Congress, this particular board game.
It seems to be a good Google search. You know, you'd be able to find out. Board games are getting to be huge again.
Yeah.
Just recently. So it's kind of hot. You should,
go to the website of the company.
Go to the website of the company. But, chances are if you didn't hear from them, probably nothing happened. And maybe you should register it and submit to some more companies.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest. Register it now. Protect it to the max and start submitting it to some other companies. I would also consider writing to the original company and just trying to find out from them what happened.
Yeah.
If they're still...
Because I was trying to find out, how do I get my prototype back?
Oh,
yeah. Well, that's... I would be actually phoning them, I suppose, if it were me.
Yeah, I mean, they don't answer the phone. It always goes to voicemail. They don't return the call. So, I'll try the letter approach, certified letter. At least I know somebody got it.
Well, depending on how much it's worth to you, you could always, you could hire an attorney to write you a letter, and that might rattle some cages and get your response.
Why don't you go hire somebody to knock on the door?
Well, you can do that.
But
as long as they're big.
Exactly, thugs.
Yeah,
but you may not get the prototype back. It might just be gone.
Is that one of those things where you're like you're sending a book submission that
you
don't necessarily you're not going
to
get that
expect
back.
Expect to get it back. You wouldn't expect to get it back unless they tell you when you're submitting that they'll return.
Sometimes
it.
In the children's book industry, if you send a dummy, they will send it back to you.
Okay, well, let's go over to Lee. Lee in Ulster is on. Lee, you're on the copyright forum.
Hi. This is one of those questions that I hope I can get to the end of without confusing myself. I had a clear case of something being lifted, and I spoke to a couple of people about doing something about it who recommended a couple of attorneys who wanted to be paid for a consult and basically said for something like this, it will go on forever, it will cost a lot, and unless you are seriously invested in going forward, you have a relatively small chance of success. So my question is, how many people who are not corporations actually do step into the arena? And what is the likelihood of being able to carry through to the end of a case?
A lot of us step into the arena, including myself, multiple times. I would suggest you look for another attorney, consult with several different people. Sometimes some attorneys just don't want to mess with what they consider a small case.
Right.
It depends on who's infringed it. Is the work registered?
It was.
Oh, well, then it would be statutory in theory, and it should be worth something. I would be talking, and I highly recommend that you talk to several different attorneys.
Are there any who will do it on spec?
Well, it's not a matter of doing it on spec. I've never had an attorney, and I've talked to dozens over the years. I've never had an attorney charge me for a consult, ever. Not one single one.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a number of situations where somebody calls and tells me that their novel, their self-published novel, has been ripped off by, you know, James Patterson, you know, whoever.
Right.
Some, you know. And so then they send me their self-published novel and the one that they say has ripped them off. And now, and I'm a slow reader, you know, so so we're talking about five, six,
hours.
7 hours, you know, of trying to compare. And I'm, you know, and some of them are like, well, how are they similar? And they said, well, you know, the hero's name is John, and there was a car crash. And I'm like, oh, man.
What I try to do for the attorneys that I send stuff to, and I've learned this through experience, is I try to give them all the information, the registration, a synopsis of why this is an infringement. I give them as much information as possible to make it easy for them to examine the situation and determine if, in fact, it's an infringement worth pursuing.
And Bill does do that, I can testify.
Lee, thank you very much for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Beryl in Chatham. Beryl.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
I take photographs, and occasionally I'd like to photograph people in the public, you know, like a portrait of maybe someone waiting for a bus or something like that. And I don't know whether this is in your domain, but I was just wondering, do I need to have some kind of release signed by them? I don't know what it would be used for. It might be used in a show. I might, for my own personal use, it's just something I see that I'm interested in as an artist. Do I need to have something signed by them? Would you happen to know that? Or can I just take it? Or of course, I would probably ask them, you know, do you mind if I take your picture?
Bill's nodding, and I'm shaking my head.
We have a disagreement among...
Oh, good. I love this.
Panel members here.
Paul is
the attorney. Paul says no, so I would, and Polly says no, so I'd put a lot of weight on that. But
we know I don't need to get a release or anything.
Correct. No,
if
they're in a public place, you don't need to.
On the other hand, let's just suppose that something happened and you decided to commercialize that image.
Well, you couldn't do that.
And use it in an advertisement or some other type of commercial setting.
That's a different story.
It's worth getting the release for, in my opinion.
But what if Beryl is showing her photographs and they're for sale at the gallery?
That's fine. I mean, that's art. I mean, there was a case a few years ago, a Hasidic scholar of some sort was walking in down in Times Square, and a guy had a camera rig set up where he was automatically taking pictures of people walking down the street. And, you know, the guy, and the famous photographer, and he had a gallery with the picture of this, a striking picture of this Hasidic guy, you know, like an 8 foot high by, you know, 6 foot photograph, you know, and the Hasidic guy sued and said, you know, I didn't give my permission. Plus it's against my religion to have photographs taken of me. And the highest court in New York State said, well, the photographer's First Amendment right to express himself, outweighs your religious.
Okay.
So, and that was a close one.
That's great to know.
Yeah.
Well, it would be good maybe to take some precautions. And anyway, I would want to share probably if it were commercialized, but I don't see that happening. Thank you. And do you know anything about patents, or is that a different program and a different phone number?
Yeah, we're not patent
lawyers. That's not your
lawyers,
bailiwick.
Right.
No.
I just wanted to say that years ago when I was living down in the city, I had the honor to have been photographed by Bill Cunningham. I was wearing a very dashing yellow pork pie hat at the time. And he didn't ask for permission to use it. So,
right.
All right.
And did he ask permission to take your picture?
No.
Well, there you go.
All right.
Beryl, thanks a lot for that.
And thank you.
Have a good one. 800-348-2551. This one came in via email from John. Hi, folks. I have a basic question. When submitting my song for copyright, do I make a recording and submit that, or do I have to have a lead sheet with musical notation and the like? Would I have someone with musical theory experience write a lead sheet in musical notation? And that is John in East Greenbush.
No, recording is fine. A recording is, you know, so long as it's a decent enough quality where they can understand the words and hear the melody, that's fine.
Okay. Bob in Clifton Park is next. Bob.
Hi. I was wondering, when a book is published near the end of a year, sometimes I've noticed it'll have a copyright of the following year. Why?
Their fiscal calendar of the publisher, I think.
I don't know the answer to that.
Maybe they were just expecting delays. I don't know. Because it's the date of the date is supposed to be the date of first publication, and so I don't know why they would do that.
Maybe they're fudging to get an extra year. I don't know. I've never encountered that.
Go to Jack in Olive Bridge. Jack, you're on.
Hi, I'm the treasurer of the board for a small tax exempt organization, 501c3. And we hold the copyright for about 300 works of a particular author, and our job is to protect that copyright. They are copyrighted in our name, but we are finding that, as other people are saying, the different people are using this material without attribution. We have been through spending about $50,000 on an attorney in just one situation. We're clear we can't go on doing that. But the question is, are we jeopardizing our copyright by not chasing these people in any way?
Okay.
No. Whether you enforce your copyright is a choice.
I can hardly hear you, sir.
Whether you enforce your copyright is a choice.
Your mic's off now, I think.
It keeps turning off.
Yes.
See, there's.
Can you hear him now, Jack?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you, Ray, very well.
Okay, he says, well, whether you choose to litigate, it's really up to you, but it won't affect your rights.
Well, it's not like trademark.
We sell this material for just basically cost for dissemination. Ah. We make about $50,000 a year.
Okay, I think we lost you there, but are you still there, Jack?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, so it's like on YouTube. I'm just going to hold my finger on this.
All right, fair enough.
Have to get this looked at.
Good for you.
My band has stuff that's people have put up of us on YouTube, and we just choose not to have it taken down.
Right,
and that's fine, and we don't jeopardize our copyrights by doing that.
Okay.
Well, we always ask them. To either give us attribution, and we have a licensing agreement. But some people, we found a couple of people don't do that, and we're wondering whether if we don't go after them,
right,
that we'll lose it.
And so we've established that you will not lose those rights.
You won't lose.
Okay. I would suggest that if you have people who are serial abusers, that you keep a file of notices that you send to people so that, you know, if you rack up five of these with one person, that you can, you know, have a little more ammunition if you go after them.
Okay. Well, I think we have a couple of minutes here. Let's try to get another one in, and we'll go on over to Charles in Albany. Charles.
Hello. Hi.
Hello.
I'm finishing up on a anthology, and it has to do with the river. Involves a lot of people from around the world. I'm going to be going to New York City to be talking to a potential publisher this next week who's looking at it very positively. I'm just wondering, since it involves about 50 writers and photographers from around the world who are each going to have their rights, their C on it or whatever, how do I go about protecting that? Do I just put the anthology in my name? I know that I have to. I'm dealing with a lot of people with a lot of rights in the book. So how would you go about that?
I think you would register the anthology, and what you would be registering is the collection and the order, you know, and the sort of curatorial effort that you put in,
and any preface or anything that you wrote.
Yeah, that too. Most of this stuff is stuff that's been published before.
Okay.
Some goes way back, and it's like obvious. It's definitely in the public domain, but that half of it is, you know, inside the public domain, and that's what, 80 years, 70 years.
Life of the author plus. Well, public domain is anything that's published before 1923. And to a lesser extent, stuff between 23 and 63. I would encourage the people whose works have not been previously published to register their copyrights individually.
Okay. I think that's about all the time we have. Polly Law, how can people find out more about you?
They can go to my website, buttonwoodart.com, or they can follow Bricolage and Mythologiny by Polly M. Law on Facebook.
Okay. And how about you, Bill Westwood?
They can go to westwoodmedical.com.
And we'll see the Allen ankle pictures before you know it?
If he gets in touch with me, you'll see them posted.
Splendid. And how about you, Paul Rapp?
I'm at paul@paulrapp.com.
Well, thank you all for being here. Support comes from Coldham & Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years. CNHArchitects.com. Dance Flurry presenting Albany Shindig, Maple Sugaring Party this Friday, 7 p.m. at First Congregational Church, Albany, Music of Quebec, and Dancing with Live Accordion Music, danceflurry.org. Agriculture Stewardship Association helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org. And Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, a country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products and gifts, waterwheelvillage.com. Thanks again to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for being here today. And thanks to you for listening and for the great calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. Our engineer at the board today, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Dina Salzman for answering the phones. I'm Ray Graff, and oh, boy, are you in luck. I wouldn't even sleep tonight because Rich Guthrie will be here tomorrow, and we'll talk. Boys, stand by now for news if you can.